checking the mics.
We ready? Good morning. It is 8 o'clock, and I would like to call the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. With me today, co-chair Representative Gabrielle Ledoux, Representative Mark Newman, and excused from today is Nancy Dahlstrom, and we hope that others will be joining us shortly. Staffing this meeting today for the first time with me is Renee Limoges. She's my chief of staff. So if there's any questions either from the audience or those listening, Renee in my office in 411 can be contacted for further information. Before us this morning are two bills, HB 60 and HB 67. And I just want the audience, those that are listening and those in the audience today, is that we do plan on taking additional testimony on this, and this will not be moving from committee today. And with that, Representative Corrine, if you would like to present to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the CNRA committee. I really do appreciate the opportunity to hear House Bill 60. With me is my chief of staff, my oil and gas committee aide, Jim Pound, who's assisting on this legislation as well, and he's going to answer any questions that I might have any challenges with, if it were to come to that. I represent the House District 14, which is Wasilla, just to further identify myself. House Bill 60 is a simple bill that simply increases the senior citizen and disabled veterans' property tax exemption from the current level of $150,000 to $250,000. Back in 1985, the legislature passed a bill that became law that established the exemption at $150,000. And we just feel that the time has come to increase that exemption by what we feel is a relatively modest $100,000. When you factor in inflation over the last 23 years, we feel that $100,000 addition to that $150,000 is very appropriate. And we're just concerned about the effect of greatly increased taxes based on assessed values and market values and so forth has caused some real financial distress for disabled vets and senior citizens. And I've gotten a lot of concerns expressed to me over the years that there's seniors that, for example, that can't afford to live in their houses anymore, that are forced to have to move out of Alaska, that unfortunately are put in situations where they're having to make tough decisions between, paying their mortgage, paying their taxes, buying medicines, those kind of things. And it just really saddens my heart to see them put in that kind of a situation. So hence my motivation for putting forth this legislation. That's essentially it. It's just an issue of being concerned for the financial affairs of seniors and disabled vets, and we would like to help them out by increasing the exemption.
Representative Corrine, thank you for your testimony. Joining us this morning is Representative Olson, and with that, this committee does have a quorum. It's 8:04, and we are in the Capitol in room 124, and a quorum's been established. Thank you, Representative Olson. Does the committee may have any questions for Representative Corrine? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Corrine, I know that I've received a tremendous amount of response on this legislation from the seniors in my community. I've noticed in the senior times that they support this legislation and are promoting it quite heavily. What types of, what's the other side of this coin? And I know that I've, in my personal experiences, it's been very positive towards this, and a little bit maybe from the municipalities have a little angst about it, but they seem to be doing quite well still on their own, but I know that the support for the seniors is tremendous. Could you give us a little bit of what you felt on the other side of this?
To be frank with you, the municipalities do not like this legislation, and they're concerned that it's going to take away monies that they could use for other programs. I view it as allowing seniors and disabled vets to keep a little more of their own hard-earned money. It's not really a program per se where monies are being paid out to administer a program. It's just simply allowing seniors and disabled vets to keep a little more of their own money. Another issue too that I thought of as well, and that is that I wanted to share with you, and that is how is that difference being able to make be made up? If it's some call it an unfunded mandate, I don't necessarily view it that way, because the municipalities have been able to make up the difference in terms of what they've lost by increasing the values of properties. The assessed values have really skyrocketed, and not just for the seniors and disabled vets that own homes, but for everybody. And I think they've more than made up. I don't have those statistics before me, but I believe that the municipalities have been able to more than make up for that difference in terms of lost revenues. So on balance, I don't believe it's a major financial hit, if you will, to municipalities by providing this senior and disabled tax exemption.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
So let's say I'm curious about something. If in order to make up the difference, the municipalities have to raise the property values or raise the assessment, raise the mill rate. Mm-hmm. So could you conceivably have a senior who ends up in a worse situation because now their property is valued more and there's a larger mill rate mm-hmm. on the amount of the property which doesn't come under mm-hmm. the exemption?
That is true. That conceivably could happen, and that's one of the reasons why I'm motivated to want to increase the exemption to help cut into that increase.
Follow up. So who's going to pay for this? I mean, my philosophical problem with this bill is, how do you justify allowing somebody with the income of a Frank Murkowski or a Wally Hickel or just, I mean, there are many seniors who actually are quite wealthy. Mm. And how do you explain to a young family which is struggling, you know, to make ends meet, a single mother, something like that, mm-hmm. that their property taxes are going to be higher mm-hmm. because we've got this exemption for senior citizens? Mm-hmm. What would be your response to a single mother, Representative Coring, who made that argument?
Yeah. I don't think we ought to automatically assume that taxes should go up to make up for this difference here. Perhaps we ought to request the municipalities to figure out ways to be more efficient with their own monies. We shouldn't automatically assume that whenever there's a shortfall that we ought to just turn to the public and ask them to pay more taxes. Perhaps they ought to look within and try to be more efficient, as we have as a state. When I first was in office, we had a $250 million budget deficit, and we tightened our belt a little bit and figured out how to make our bureaucracy more efficient. I had House Bill 40 that merged and consolidated agencies, and we're spending a lot less money as a result. So I don't think there ought to be an automatic assumption that we ought to increase taxes to make up for any losses in other areas of government. So that's one point. And then as far as the issue of wealthy seniors, certainly there are wealthy seniors out there, but I think there's a lot more poor seniors. I hear from a lot of folks out there who are really struggling financially, and certainly the wealthy ones would benefit, but I think they're an exception, not the rule. The rule are the many seniors that are living on the edge and that sometimes do have to choose, make some tough choices financially as to whether they should sell their house and move out of Alaska or downsize.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Just for those of you that are listening in, we will get to public testimony as soon as possible. Representative Olson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Has the Mat-Su Borough weighed in on this, Representative Coring? Have they taken a position one way or another?
I'm not aware that we've got any correspondence from them. My guess is that they would be concerned about the legislation, but I have not heard anything from the borough.
Has any other, or through the chair, has any other borough or municipality either supported or come out against it?
To my knowledge, none so far on the bill this year. We had the bill last year, and if I remember right, the municipality of Anchorage did express concern about the legislation.
Thank you.
If I might, Representative Olson, we do have a letter from AML, and they are in opposition as it stands without additional state funding for the program. And we do have Mike Abbott online, but we have Mayor John Williams in Kenai, who is on time constraints. So if the committee would allow me to move into public testimony, I would like to allow the mayor to speak. Mm-hmm. Representative Coring, will you stand by for any questions?
Please do. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor John Williams, are you with us?
Yes, thank you very much to the committee this morning for this early morning conference call. Chairman Goring, I appreciate your taking an interest in this. As most of you know and recall, I've been a mayor for nearly 20 years now, 18 years with the city of Kenai and presently the Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor. This particular issue has been one of interest to me for many, many years, and I really have to say that I view this as an unfunded mandate by the state, and I say that because history shows us that that's exactly what it really is. If we want to talk about history and we want to talk about inflation, I have some numbers that I'd like to give to you so you can see what the effect on municipalities really is. This program, as Representative Goring pointed out, started in 1986. At that time, the program caused a non-production of revenue to the borough of about $131,000 and was well accepted and could be easily defended. The state also contributed at that time to the support of that program, thus making it a funded mandate. That state support quit in 1997. That was the last year that the state funded any revenue to help offset the loss in revenue to the borough. From that point forward, the inflation route, according to our schedule and under our present exemption, caused that loss in revenue to go from $131,000 to the present position of $4,382,000, as we saw it. That is $4,382,000. Now, looking at the chart showing a $250,000 exemption today, what we find is that there will be a total loss in revenue to the entire borough and its six municipalities of $56 million in taxation. That's throughout the entire state. Within the Kenai Peninsula borough, we're looking at about $4,025,000 as it would stand at $250,000 in exemption. We have six incorporated municipalities within the borough. Each will stand to lose tax revenue. Now, another assumption that I'd like to correct is that all we have to do is raise the taxes or raise the assessed value. Let me point out that the assessed value is mandated by state law to be no less than 90%, and we are mandated to be to have our properties assessed at 100% of full market value. There's a little law that says that if we don't, the state comes around and collects the difference between what we don't assess and what we should assess by removing money from our educational funding for the program. That in itself is kind of ludicrous and incorrect. So to say that it wouldn't cost us any more money really is a misnomer. In our case, for the borough itself, we will lose totally about $4,025,000 under this program. Now, let me point out also that under the hardship rule, there is no need for any senior citizen to lose their home because of taxation. In fact, in my 20 years of mayor, not one person can come forward and say, I lost my home because I was taxed out of it. At least I've never heard of one. Let me also point out that there is a state law, not mandated, but what can be accepted and put into law by each municipality. It's a state hardship law. What that state hardship law says that if your property taxes are more than you can pay and you can come in and show a hardship to the assessor, all he can charge you, he can cut your taxes down to 2% of your gross income. So if you owned a $1 million home and you found yourself in a situation of not being able to pay the taxes and your income for the year was $40,000, you could come in and you could get your taxes cut to $800 on that $1 million home. If you were in a more modest home of $300,000 and your income was only $30,000 a year, for example, your taxes would be no more than $600. That law can be incorporated into any municipality's books. Now, I also found, representing Matt Sue, that there were I think only two people that applied for hardship in Mat-Su last year. In Juneau, there were 33 approved for the hardship clause. So the hardship clause does work. Now, the other thing is that the $4 million loss to our borough in this particular instance must be placed on the backs of all other taxpayers. I, for one, have a third-generation family growing up here. My son is working hard to support a family of his wife and three children, and he has to pay a large amount of taxes to take care of his situation. Now, let me show you what happens and what is grossly unfair within the borough when you create a second class of citizens, meaning that senior citizens become different than everybody else. And let me preface that by saying I am a senior citizen. I'm 68 years old, and I do take advantage of the tax exemption. And when the taxes go up, I pay my share. But let's take a rural area within the borough that has a road. We're 8 miles from the fire department. The road is gravel, needs to be maintained. On that road are seven senior citizen families and one family that's raising children and younger. That road has to be maintained. That fire department has to go there. The ambulance has to go there. All the things have to be done to service that road. And yet the entire cost of service on that road has to be borne on the backs of the only taxpayer there, one, compared to the seven who get every service absolutely free, whether it's roads, whether it's fire service, senior services, whether it's ambulance services, whether it's recreational services, swimming pool services, every one of the services, hospital services, every service area that's been voted into that area, that senior pays absolutely not 1 cent for. And many times, and many of the seniors that I've talked to have said, you know, it's kind of an incredible thing. Most of us voted for all of these services. We voted for the new hospital. We voted for the fire department. We voted for the road service area. And by the way, we voted for the swimming pool, too. But we don't have to pay 1 cent for it, and we think that that's unfair as well. So rather than make this a mandate by the state, an absolute mandate by the state, I think it would be much fairer to allow each and every municipality to make the determination on its own as to whether or not they want to implement this program, and they will be fair. I will preface all of these comments by saying that the borough, the Kenai Peninsula borough, has been one of the fairest of all over the years. We are the only borough in the entire state of Alaska that offers a 100% tax exemption for our seniors. And let me say that there are 2,800 senior properties that take advantage of that exemption. Now, let me tell you, it has worked a hardship on the taxation of this borough, as I point out, to the tune of $4,382,000 presently. So once again, and to wind up my testimony, I believe that a mandated tax exemption works a hardship on all communities, that this should be an optional tax exemption allowed to be determined by local government, and that all governments have the right to institute the state, already existing state law regarding hardships that allows them to charge no more than 2% of gross income for property taxes, which in most cases would be less than one dividend check. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me the testimony, and I'll take any questions you care to ask.
Thank you for your testimony, Mayor Williams. Does the committee members have any questions? First, I'd like to welcome Representative Salmon to our meeting today. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Williams, Representative Newman. Just a couple of comments on what you had to say about the senior spending. And you had mentioned that there was only two exemptions in the Mat-Su, three in Juneau. I don't...
33, sir.
33 in Mat-Su?
In Juneau.
33 in Juneau and two in Mat-Su. So there seems to be some discrepancies in how municipalities may go about providing for this hardship rule in the amount of paperwork that they have to do, the availability. I know in the Mat-Su borough is quite large, and it, I know people in the northern district, in my district, It's difficult for them to get down to the borough seat to make sure that they get some of this stuff done. And most seniors I found just don't like to do that kind of stuff. So I wonder a little bit, you know, in my own mind, how many seniors would like to be doing this, but they just don't want to. They get frustrated by the paperwork and overwhelmed by the paperwork, and that is hard on them to do that. But you also talked about non-production. You mentioned non-production in revenue. And that term somewhat struck me in the fact that I feel that most seniors spend the majority of their money locally. They don't go very far from home to spend their money. And that money, I think, will, you know, they're either paying it to the borough or they're going to the store locally and shopping. And I know that in my position, when I visit the senior centers in my district, quite often I have seniors coming up to me saying, "Representative Newman, we don't have a longevity bonus anymore. My Medicare and Medicaid is going up. My expenses are going up faster than I can afford them. What can you do to help me out?" And this is one of the biggest issues that I get hit with when I go talk to the seniors in my area. Do seniors in your area talk to you or ask you about issues like that? Or how do you respond to some of those issues?
All right, thank you very much for those questions. And yes, as I pointed out, I am a senior citizen. I associate with senior citizens. My father-in-law is 85 years old. He lives there. My wife is a senior citizen. We go to the Senior Citizen Center regularly, and having lived in this community for 38 years, I know most of the senior citizens that are there, that are here. Let me respond to the issue of the hardship program, first of all. I find it incredulous that there should be a mountain of paperwork for anyone to fill out. The form that the state furnishes for the hardship program is one page, very simple to fill out. Now, if a municipality has other rules to follow, then the municipality has seen fit to introduce those kinds of rules. But believe me, the one-page document, if you pull it up and take a look at it, is an extremely simple document to fill out and can be filled out by nearly any senior or any representative of the senior at the Senior Citizen Center. Let me also point out that while you say that seniors pay taxes in other areas, in other ways, that may be true in some municipalities. Some municipalities don't have sales tax, but so does every other citizen pay those same taxes. I think the thing that makes it most unfair is, as I pointed out earlier, a young couple that lives on a rural road expecting fire and road protection, road plowing. They expect the hospital to serve them. They expect the swimming pool to be there. And they pay for everything they get. Seniors pay absolutely nothing under total exemptions for any of these services. And, of course, when the $150,000 is mandated, they pay for none of those services up to $150,000. I don't say that there shouldn't be an exemption. And I reiterate that once again. It is my belief that local government can best determine by testimony from its own seniors where to set that level at, and it should not be mandated by the state. I make one final comment with regard to this. If my memory serves me correct, the governor has put into the budget $43 million for a revenue sharing program to help struggling municipalities meet the needs of their local governments. And yet this bill, if enacted, would subtract $56 million from those same municipalities. How can you give $43 million on one hand, take away $56 million on the other hand? It's like a shell game at the circus. It just doesn't make sense. Let the local communities make these decisions themselves.
Mayor Williams, thank you for your testimony. With that, I'd just like to inform everyone online and in the audience that we do have many people that would like to testify on this bill this morning, and we have a second bill that this committee would like to hear also. So with that, I am going to set a public comment at 5 minutes if I have support from my committee members, and then allow the follow-up questions from members as they see fit. Next online is Mike Abbott from the Municipality of Anchorage. Mr. Abbott, are you with us?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
If you'd like to comment, Mr. Abbott, on HB 60.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Mike Abbott. I'm the Deputy City Manager for the Municipality of Anchorage. We're pleased to have the opportunity to comment on House Bill 60 today. Mayor Begich and the Anchorage Assembly strongly support the senior citizen property tax exemption as well as the disabled veteran property tax exemptions. We're concerned that at the current point in 2006, that state required program cost municipal taxpayers approximately $20 million. And as a result, our support for House Bill 60 would be conditioned on the inclusion of an appropriate fiscal note. And we're not aware of what that would be for the entire state, but for Anchorage, that would, our estimate indicates that would be approximately $13 to $14 million additional dollars beyond the $20 million that the city currently expends. As we say, we believe the property tax exemption appropriately supports senior citizens retaining their primary residence. We only wish that it was a mechanism for funding it. A couple of the alternatives that have been described to and that have been discussed in the past in the context of the senior citizen property tax exemption would be, instead of increasing the tax exemption, if there's a desire on the part of the state to see the cost of property taxes for seniors offset, then to provide a state-funded rebate system whereby senior citizens could apply for or could automatically receive a rebate of property taxes from the state equal to the exemption that they would either currently have or an expanded exemption that's being considered today. Madam Chairman, I know you've got a lot of people to deal with today. I'll be glad to stop here and take any questions from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott. Do committee members have questions? There are none at this time. Mr. Abbott, will you be standing by?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Van Zandt, would you like to address the committee?
Madam Chair, I'm here to answer any questions, but I do believe you have the municipal fiscal note that we put together showing that this increased exemption would cost municipalities an extra about $16 million. It would raise from about $40 million to about $56 million overall. So I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Van Zandt. With that, Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Van Zandt, that's a total increase of $16 million statewide?
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, that's correct, sir.
How many municipalities would that affect? And do you have any idea of the number of exemptions in each municipality? What does that equate to, like, per household? Can you kind of, do you have any information regarding that?
I haven't worked out the increase. The old number, the $40 million, was about $1,800 per household. We're looking at another $700 or $800, so about, it would increase it to $2,500 to $2,700 per household.
So just to reiterate that, if a person was paying $1,800 in taxes, they would have $1,800 exempt off of a $3,000 tax bill. Now they'd have approximately $2,500 exempt off a $3,000 tax bill.
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, that's correct. That's the overall average, but you also have to remember that the range goes from Whittier about $160 to Anchorage, which is about $2,100 under the old system. So the range is quite wide.
Thanks, sir. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Representative Ledoux.
Yes, Mr. Vincent, could you tell me how many communities in Alaska have the hardship exemption?
Through the Chair, Representative Ledoux, the hardship exemption is available to all municipalities. We do not get reports from municipalities as to how many people actually apply for it, because it's on the municipality. It's a local call, and it's not a state mandate, so we just don't get the numbers.
follow up. But do you know that which municipalities have the exemption, not the numbers of people who apply for it, but which municipalities have it as part of local option?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I do know, as Mayor Williams had pointed out, that Mat-Su, Mat-Su, Juneau, I do know those two simply because of the conversations I've had with the assessors there. But like I said, it is available to all municipalities. Whether they have people that meet the criteria or not or apply, we just don't know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Mr. Abbott, are you still online?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you answer that for Anchorage for Representative Ledoux?
Anchorage does not have, has not enacted the hardship program locally.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott. With that, are there anyone else online in the other legislative offices that would like to testify this morning on HB 60? Hearing none, Representative Corrine, if I could get you to step back. I have two people in the audience that would like to address the committee, and you will stay with us?
Sure, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Kathy Wasserman. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm with the Alaska Municipal League. The Municipal League and the approximately 30 communities that do impose property tax totally support the senior citizens and disabled veterans property tax exemption for those people in need. However, as things now stand in Alaska statutes, we are opposed to House Bill 60. The original program in 1985 was wisely implemented in that the state, who did not have taxing authority, would reimburse the communities. That way, there was equity. The tax burden was not placed on other taxpayers. That money, the revenue lost that cities realized, were then reimbursed from the state. But as of 1996, when the state failed their obligation to reimburse, the burden was then placed on the remainder of the property taxpayers. So it's really not the municipalities that have to make up that money, it's the other taxpayers that have to make up that money. Difficulties with making ends meet is not a problem for only seniors. Many young families in this state or single parents are financially strapped. And as we all know, purchasing homes in the state of Alaska, especially in the larger communities, is difficult and very expensive. And we feel that this could also impact the brain drain that we're seeing. If you can't afford to raise a young family in this state, then maybe it's easier and cheaper to go somewhere else. Every year, the legislature imposes more and more exemptions, and the tax burden on those who do not qualify for those exemptions is growing and increasing. This bill would impose a total of $56 million in lost revenue on the residents of these 30 municipalities. While all those that fall under the exemption would still require the basic services, the number of people left to pay for those services will continue to fall. With high fuel prices, high retirement costs, and a lack of revenue sharing, communities are simply not able to cut back costs and become more efficient to the tune of $56 million. We have two suggested solutions, one being to abide by the stated obligation in Alaska Statute 2945030G, which states the state shall reimburse a borough or city, as appropriate, for the real property tax revenues lost to it by the operation of E of this section. That's very, very clear. This statute is even mentioned in the state fiscal notes. If the state, as we heard testimony last year, if the state feels that this is the right thing to do for seniors, then we would ask that the state then do the right thing, pay for this unfunded mandate. They have not done so since 1996, so we would say the first solution, reimburse communities. If that is not acceptable or something that we would pass, we would say the second solution would be to give communities the tools needed to help all low-income families. Not just seniors, but all low-income families. And the state can make those local decisions at the local level and decide how to ferret out those exemptions on a needs basis. Another possibility might be something that the assessor, state assessor Steve Van Zandt, mentioned last week, which was the, Steve, I just lost it, circuit breaker program, which would base a household's property tax so that it would not exceed a certain percent of their household income. So that would be our second solution, would be to put something in place that would allow cities and municipalities to have a local exemption option where they could set their own criteria. Most communities are, I shouldn't say most, all communities are totally in support of giving seniors in need help, but there must be a way that we can help all people in need in this state. Thank you very much.
Do committee members have questions for Ms. Wasserman? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Kathy, first, thanks for all you do. I know you work tirelessly for the AML.
Thank you.
And you're certainly a wealth of information, and I enjoy your company. You had mentioned a property tax exemption not to exceed a percent of income.
Mm-hmm.
How would you see that working into a bill like this?
Well, I guess to my mind it would have to just simply change the bill. It would just have to be a completely new bill that would give the either the communities a local option or allow this circuit breaker program to go into effect. I would see it as having to be an entirely new bill.
And just a quick comment to the chair is, you know, you stated, and we've heard Mr. Williams state the fact that, you know, we do have young citizens in the state who are struggling to survive, and that's true. I mean, I think we were probably all in that same boat at one time or another. I was. But the ability to overcome that, I think, is a large part of what we're talking here, whereas seniors don't have that ability to go out and get another job. I mean, most seniors, it's very difficult for them to get employment to start with. And what's available is very minimal wage, greeter at Walmart, that type of things is where we typically see our seniors employed. For those to go out into the job market, it's very, very difficult for them to try and raise those extra funds. I think that's an important part of what we need to consider in these issues, too, is that ability to raise that needed income when your property taxes do. Seniors do not have that ability to do that.
And Representative Newman, through the chair, I think that's exactly what either a circuit breaker or a needs-based program would address. It would help. It would help those people who we all talk about who don't have the need or the ability to go out and get another job, don't have the ability to pay for their house, and they're strapped and right on the edge. I think we all need to find a way to help those people. But to mandate communities to help all people based on their age and only their age is brings no equity to the program.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Representative Ledoux.
What would be the difference between the circuit breaker program and the hardship exemption that we've already heard about?
Maybe there wouldn't be much at all. It would just be something that the communities themselves could enable to go into effect throughout the entire program.
Follow up. Isn't that what we've just heard, that the hardship exemption, local communities have the option of adopting that?
Yes, but the hardship exemption now really only needs to kick in after the first $150,000 of assessed value, because the first $150,000 is already off the table. So if it was a local option, all property tax, then that would kick in. The circuit breaker program could kick in from the very beginning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
With that, I have no one else signed up to speak on this issue. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak and address the committee? Is there anyone at anyone online that hasn't had an opportunity to speak to this issue? With that, the committee will move on to HB 67. Is that right? Municipal property tax exemption for police homes. Is there anyone in the audience? Let me see. I have a list. Is Vernon Marshall here? Is there someone here representing the sponsor?
Yes.
Sorry.
Thank you. Good morning.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chairs.
Your name for the record, sir.
My name is Max Gruenberg. I represent Mountain View and Russian Jack House District 20. And I appreciate very much your scheduling this bill. A number of you have heard the bill before. House Bill 67, which was introduced by Representative Chenault and myself, co-sponsored by Representative Lynn, is the same as House Bill 27, which unanimously passed the House last year and passed through this committee when a number of you were on the committee. What the bill is designed to do is to assist neighborhoods that need additional police protection. And it's the kind of a situation where if you have a police person living in the neighborhood, a police vehicle readily visible, it will deter crime. The federal government has already recognized this and provides loans to police officers to permit them to buy and own their own homes in areas that need police protection. But this has not provided sufficient incentives in a number of areas, including the areas I represent, to have police live in the area. And what this bill does is very simple. It allows a municipality to pass an ordinance that will allow this tax credit against their municipal property taxes. And the ordinance must designate the area that meets this eligibility requirement. And the area, the types of requirements are discussed on page 2, which include federal programs of special assistance for urban developments, neighborhood revitalization, and law enforcement, or areas with a statistically higher occurrence of crime than the municipality as a whole. And areas could meet both the requirements of subsections 1 and 2. And the ordinance must include the definition of law enforcement officer. The amount exempt from taxation may not exceed $150,000 of the assessed value of the real property. And if two or more individuals are eligible for the exemption, not more than two exemptions may be granted. The area, the parcel, must be the primary residence owned in whole or part by the law enforcement officer and occupied in whole or part as the primary personal place of abode by the law enforcement officer. In other words, it could have a small apartment on it, too. That wouldn't disqualify it. But we don't want somebody buying an apartment house and occupying one apartment in a large apartment house. And this simply provides the municipal government, the municipal assembly, with the tools to do this. And we have letters of support from the mayor and various other people in the packet that's been given out. It's not mandatory. It's simply optional. And we would urge its favorable consideration. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to introduce the bill today.
Good morning, and thank you for your testimony. Representative Ledoux.
I've got two questions. First of all, in the Anchorage area, how much would a person save? Let's say he or she has bought a $300,000 house.
Do we have the assessor? We have the assessor, I believe, on the line, but it's approximately $2,200. It's not a lot. It's a small incentive, but it's some incentive.
And then my second question is, would the bill also apply to plainclothes policemen who don't have their vehicles there?
Sure.
Why?
Because if you have any law enforcement officer, number one, a person may be assigned to a detective bureau or undercover on day one, but go into the uniformed. Take on a uniform the next day. They can go off detective status at any time, go on detective status. Number two, because having the policeman or woman there is also helpful, even if a person wouldn't know they're a police person, because that would allow the person to be in the neighborhood at any time and observe and prevent crime. And number three, because it would be just administratively too difficult to make it only when they have their uniform on. And some of them might have a car, some of them might not, or a marked car. But this is the concept. The word gets out in the neighborhood often that so-and-so lives in the neighborhood. Usually people around there know that we have a police person on the block. At least that's been my experience personally. In Mountain View, the last police person who lived there was about a dozen years ago and moved out. I think it helped it was a woman having her there. And we haven't had that ability since then. And I know that Representative Chenault has been interested in this too. He was trying to get a trooper stationed out in Nikiski and felt that this would be helpful to do that. So it's not just an urban problem, but it can be helpful all over the state. It's not limited to municipal police, but could be state police, it could be FBI, whoever the ordinance defined.
Thank you, Representative. Oh. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair.
As long as they have property taxes. This is Norman Cohen, my assistant, who is smarter, better than me, better informed, and he knows a lot more answers
than
I do.
Thank you for joining us. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Grunberg. Just several questions that have popped up, Max, when we're talking about this is, and maybe your staff can write these down as we go along, is first off, what if there's three or four police officers in an area, who decides get the exemptions? Does it go on St. George? And I'll ask questions, then you can maybe respond.
Do you want me to wait until you've asked all of them? Okay.
And then, so if there's three or four, somebody may stay there longer. How is it based on rank? I don't know how. Who decides, the municipality or the police department, or who decides that? Also, and you discussed rural Alaska, and a lot of times the public safety owns the houses in rural Alaska that a lot of the times the state troopers go through. So, who gets the exemption on that, the police department or the communities, or how does that work if they actually own the community? And also, probably the biggest question I had, Representative Grunberg, was on page 1, lines 10 and 11, where it states, if two or more individuals are eligible, and the important part here is for an exemption for the same property, under this subsection, not more than two exemptions may be granted. So, if we had a married couple that were both troopers, they each get a $150,000 exemption for a total of $300,000 exemption on one piece of property, where I thought the intent of the bill was to try and make sure that we had police officers around in different areas of the community, and that there seems to be some inappropriateness there. And who would decide those issues?
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, certainly. May I answer them in the order that you presented them through the chair? If there are several officers who would move into an area, they would presumably each be eligible to do it. I think that it's possible that that would occur, but traditionally, officers have been unwilling, any of them, to move into these areas. But if We were fortunate enough to have two or three, I'm going to use Mountain View as an example, to do this, or Fairview, any of the areas. They would each be eligible, unless the municipality through the ordinance said less than that would be eligible. But it normally works so that any police officer.
Representative Newman.
On that particular point, Chair, but on line 7, it says not more than two exemptions may be granted.
The issue is each individual property. If there are four people living on property.
No, I understand. Okay.
I support your bill and what you're doing, but I just want to have these questions coming up.
No, this is fine. I appreciate that. On lines 10 and 11, the reason that we put two officers is because, as you pointed out, sometimes officers live together, often married couples, both officers. But if several officers went in together, we didn't want them aggregating this, but a couple or, you know, a family unit, for example, or maybe a duplex, two police officers, each family would own half of it, something like that. That's why we would allow no more than two to do it, because we were looking at couples and things like that. Did that complete your answer?
So no more than two per household?
Per parcel, yeah. No, it's not per household. It could be two households. Let's say there's a duplex, a one parcel, but each family, two officers, each family occupying half, then it would be per parcel, although there were two households owning the same parcel.
Yeah.
And secondly, in a state-owned situation, this is irrelevant because the incentive to get the peace officer to live there is that the state provides the entire housing. And that's a much greater incentive than just a loan or a tax break, something like this. Nobody has discussed increasing state ownership in these areas, the municipality going and buying a house and saying, we'll provide free housing. There's nothing, I don't think, to prevent that. The reason, Madam Chair, Representative Newman, that we had to do this bill is because AS 2945050 requires that before a municipality can grant a property tax exemption, the state has to permit it. The municipality of Anchorage or Kodiak or wherever, Wasilla, can't just pass an ordinance. The state law has to permit it. And that's why we have to pass these bills. A few years ago, I think the 23rd legislature, we had to pass another bill to allow a municipality to provide a tax exemption for volunteer firefighters. And that's when this idea arose. We tacked this on to that bill. But the bill, I don't think, passed, as I recall. Otherwise, this would have passed. Or this was removed from it, I forget. But we have to go through this whole process any time to give a municipality the right to pass an ordinance.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I believe it did pass for volunteer firefighters. They, I did review the exemptions. I think it's for $10,000.
Yeah, it was
a much smaller amount.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And we had this on at one point, and I think in Senate Finance we had to take it off. So that's why we introduced it again last time.
Thank you for coming forward and providing us more clarity on this bill. We do have others online and in the audience, so if you'd like to remain in the room or at the seat, I'll take the online first sure. to see if there are questions that you might provide us further information on. Chief Hune, are you online from the Municipality of Anchorage?
Yes, Madam Chair, I am, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this bill. For the record, my name is Rob Hune. I'm the Chief of Police in Anchorage, and I support this legislation as a foundation for local enabling ordinance, which I'm sure will engender its own level of debate locally. I think it provides an incentive for law enforcement officers to move into neighborhoods where their presence would be beneficial to the overall public safety mission. I presently, though, can't tell you how many people at the Anchorage Police Department would take advantage of this. Certainly, I think that as the local enabling ordinance is debated, a lot of those folks will identify themselves. But we found, you know, officer presence is an effective deterrent in neighborhoods that are subject to higher levels of crime. And it also affords the officers opportunity, which I would encourage, to become members of that community and not be viewed so much as a enforcement or a suppressive force that may come into the communities and then be leaving, but also as stakeholders in those particular neighborhoods. So I appreciate the opportunity to support this. I look forward to the discussion at the local level on how it's going to specifically apply to Anchorage, and I would answer anybody's questions if they have any.
Do committee members have questions of Chief Huhn? Chief, there are no questions at this time. Will you remain online?
Yes, ma'am, I will.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Abbott, did you have any further feedback from the Municipality of Anchorage on this issue?
No, ma'am. Like Chief Huhn, I'm available for questions.
Thank you, sir. Steve Van Zandt, you're online for questions. Did you have any comments on HB 67 for the committee's consideration?
No, Madam Chair, I don't. I'm just here to answer any question that might come up.
Thank you. To the sponsor, I have a couple questions that I've researched or would like you to research further and provide me feedback, not necessarily at this time. I appreciate that you're providing a local option in this particular vehicle that you're bringing forward, but do have some concerns about the clarity on multiple exemptions on one parcel or in one household. I also would like you to research, and if you can provide now, the issue of using the language law enforcement officers, and I'm wondering if that's consistent with state statute when we define a law enforcement person. I've heard in other language in working with public safety that we use the term peace officer, and if a law enforcement officer is an umbrella that everyone will understand equally, would just like some clarity and further conversation on that one. I also was intrigued by Representative Newman's request for clarification on geography, that if we would have an entire neighborhood, as you may not have heard before on HB 60, we had a conversation from the Kenai borough that was talking about service areas and how they are impacted if everyone on one particular street might receive a particular exemption and how that would impact someone who didn't qualify for the exemption on the same seat. So I'm wondering if you can expand a conversation about geographic location of this particular exemption as you're umbrellaing. I understand you're providing a local option, but talk to me about geography. And then finally, to the state assessor, and again, I don't need this information today, but I'm looking at the fiscal note for the Municipality of Anchorage. We were able to talk about the previous HB 60 and a potential impact of about $16 million to local municipalities throughout the state. I'm wondering if you have any kind of correlation with peace officers, law enforcement officers, and a fiscal note to municipalities with this particular piece of legislation. And with that, I really don't need the information now, but if you'd like to respond, I'd be happy to.
Well, okay. If I may, let me go to the last question first. Fiscal notes, local fiscal notes. We require by state statute that the state agency that's concerned with a piece of legislation or agency must provide a fiscal note. We have never had a similar offer for local governments to do it. And I have long been a great fan of adding a law that would require the legislature to notify local governments of fiscal impacts. And I know you, both the chairs, have been involved with local governments, and Representative Olson, and I don't know about the other two gentlemen on the committee, and I've talked with Kevin Ritchie quite a bit about introducing legislation, and they have a draft, and about putting in a bill like that. That's sort of by introduction. My recollection, and by the way, I have a file on that if you want to pursue that, is that the folks from the municipality can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe they were thinking that the very maximum that they would ever expect to get in Anchorage would be maybe 10 or 11 officers. I think that's very high. I would be surprised to see if we did this that we would attract more than one or two into our area. I think it would be a very small number. In my district, I represent Donna Drive in that area, very nice area. We have a bunch of police who live in that part of the district. And I'm just using this as an example. But this is to the areas that really need the police protection. And I would be very surprised in Anchorage if we were, depending on the area that was defined by the ordinance, to have more than two or three. I think it would be a very small impact. But the impact on the community would be great. Law enforcement officer versus peace officer. When we drafted this, we used the term law enforcement officer, but allowing the municipality to define that the way they wished. We specifically did not use peace officer because it could be, I think that the term law, I'm trying to think back myself, the term law enforcement officer was a little broader and could be defined any way that the municipality wished to do it. We wanted to leave that part of the local option, but we specifically talked with the folks and used that term. And the geographic location, it would certainly be possible that two or three officers could wind up on the same street. Again, that would be up to the municipality. We wanted, and we're suggesting that the municipality designate a geographic area. I don't think it's possible to micromanage these people, although a municipality could do that.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Gruenberg, and again, I want to stress I support the concept here. I just want clarity on the issues.
Mm-hmm.
And again, is who decides? I'm not clear on who decides on who gets these. So if a police officer moves into an area that's designated as a high-risk area that this is eligible, does he just go to City Hall and pick up a form, or does the Assembly decide, well, Officer Smith gets it, but maybe Officer Jones does or not get it? And I want to make sure that politics doesn't get in the way here, because that can be very vicious at times. So is it every police officer who would move into that area would be eligible for that exemption regardless? They would just go to City Hall and pick up a standard form so that everybody who wanted to be eligible for this would be, so that nobody gets cut out of the system. I want to make sure that that's perfectly clear. And also, if we have a police officer who signs, and I see the feasibility of this, a lease-to-purchase type agreement. Now, he's leasing the home, but he possibly could purchase it, but he possibly could not. It depends. You know, they move around. They're very transient at times.
Mm-hmm.
So like in a lease-purchase agreement, if they're there, and then they move out. I mean, how would something like that work if they don't own a home, or they're renting a home, or a lease purchase type agreement? How would that work?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, two questions. The first was, who decides, or what would the mechanism be for the eligibility? It's our intent that a designation of the geographic area or areas would be by ordinance, and a definition of the type of profession, the definition of law enforcement officer. Anybody who met those criteria and lived in that area in their own home, owned their the home that they own would be eligible. So they wouldn't designate Officer Jones and not Officer Smith. It would be to the class of people. If you're a member of the troopers, the FBI, the Anchorage Police Department, or whatever, and you live in an area of town, then you're eligible. You'd pick up the form or check off the form on a box when you applied for your exam, you know, when you paid your property tax. Number two, on line eight, the word is owned. And if you simply have an option, you wouldn't become an owner until you exercise the option and transferred ownership. It's very simple, and the development of the law of real property is ownership is determined by the title to the property. If the title to the property is in your name, and presumably the ordinance could say if it's owned by, let's say, a family trust for estate planning purposes, a lot of times people, husband and wife, will put their home into a family trust with all of their assets. That would certainly be okay under the title of ownership, but not a lease purchase.
I think it says in owned in whole or part, so that's in the process.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure it's clear the legislative intent, the representative, and
yeah, clear. That's if let us say it was the address 123 Parsons Street, and it's owned by John and Jane Smith, and Jane is a police officer, then that would be owned in part and would be eligible for the exemption.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gruenfer. With that, we'll open, I'm sorry, Representative Ledoux.
One of the things that you said, Representative Gruenberg, sort of intrigued me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you were talking about how part of your area is an area where there are a lot of police officers already living, mm-hmm. and another part is more of a higher crime rate mm-hmm. area. Mm-hmm. And you weren't sure how many police officers would take advantage of this program. And then you used the term, depending upon how you define the eligible area.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I just have a little bit of a concern that the eligible area could be defined so that somebody could take advantage of this and not actually be living in the portion of the area where you want them to be living, but instead would be living in the portion of the area where they already are living.
Through the chair. It happens to be that the way my, and I'm just using my election district as an example, my election district is drawn, includes Mountain View and an area of Turpin much to the east that's a very nice home. I would not anticipate that the municipal assembly would draw the eligible area to include the Donna Drive area. We're talking about the area of Mountain View, Fairview, or whatever, that the ordinance would be very specific and describe by street boundaries or geographic boundaries the eligible area for the tax exemption. So you'd actually, and again, I'm just using my district as an example, would live in the area bounded by North Mountain View, we'll say, that's very geographically specific. So you'd actually have to be within the boundary. It has nothing to, you know, the election districts are totally different. It has nothing to do with that at all.
Just follow up. Do you think that the language that you've used on the definition of eligible area on page 2 covers that so that it couldn't happen that somebody is living in an actual nicer area?
Yes, we worked a lot on that with the municipality and the mayor's office and these terms that they use, federal program of special assistance for urban development, neighborhood revitalization, or law enforcement, those are terms of art and are very specifically defined to include these areas that are, I'm going to say, high crime. We worked a lot on that.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Grunberg, you piqued my interest when you said, well, in my district. And then I began to think about my district.
Oh, yeah.
And how this would affect police officers or Alaska State Troopers in my district, where, you know, in between Willow and Talkeetna, you know, there may be several officers who have an acre or 2 acres of land or whatever the case may be, or a home there, maybe on Lot 5, Block 2, Max Grunberg Estates. Would the, I guess, the borough, Mansu Borough, have the ability to grant some type of an agreement or a tax waiver to those state troopers who own property around the state like that?
They
How would that affect people?
Through the chair. They would not, unless those areas met the requirements on page 2. And it's absolutely not intended for them to designate 123 Oak Street as a high crime area or something. That is not the intent at all. It's to be a neighborhood or an, I mean, it certainly could be around Willow or Talking or wherever if they met these criteria. I frankly don't know whether they would there, but if they did, but it's a neighborhood. It's not just somebody's lot. This is not at all to be a
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Give me for a particular officer.
Representative Olson and then Representative Ledoux.
Representative Grunberg, how would you envision handling Spinard, where you have some real nice neighborhoods and then within 100 feet you may have commercial districts that have residential housing in them that might be where a fair amount of the crime in that part of town takes on, but it's the neighborhoods would be much smaller. Would we end up with a map similar to that one, or how would we do it?
There is a certain amount of discretion given to a municipality under the bill. I don't believe, and I at one time did represent Spinard in this body a number of years ago, so I am familiar that there may be certain little pockets that would meet this. Whether that could be broken down this small, I don't know. Maybe Mr. Abbott would know that. But we're generally talking about neighborhoods, not just one block areas. But a lot of this at that level is left up to the municipality. I don't believe that these... I don't believe that a neighborhood that is pockets of poverty, we'll say, or something like that, would be eligible for these federal programs, but I don't know. We're generally talking about whole neighborhoods. But again, we wanted to give the municipality the choice here.
Representative Olson, follow-up?
Then as a follow-up, would you say that in all likelihood Spinard wouldn't?
I'm saying I don't know specifically about Spinard. I don't know the details of that neighborhood anymore, I'm afraid. Through the chair, maybe Mr. Abbott or somebody from the municipality be able to answer that if they're still on the line.
Representative Ledoux?
Representative Grunberg, I assume that by municipality we're including boroughs also.
Mm-hmm. Any taxing authority, through the chair, any taxing authority.
Okay, follow up here. What would you do in the case where there is a city within a borough? And the borough's the one who charges the property tax, But the city doesn't have a property tax. Let's just say the city just operates through a sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
Would the city be able to pass an ordinance which then affects the borough's collection of that property tax? I mean, if there would the local option passed by the city bind the borough in that case?
Through the chair. No. It's the taxing authority. This 2945050 deals with the taxing entity that imposes property taxes.
Thank you for your testimony.
Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't get to the detail of Representative Olson's question, but maybe if Mr. Abbott's there, he could respond if you want to.
I appreciate that, Representative. We have other people in the audience waiting to testify, and so I was trying to move that forward, and then we can go back to Mr. Abbott if he has comments on that particular point. Is that acceptable, Representative Olson? Vern Marshall, are you still in our audience? Welcome. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Vernon Marshall. I represent the Public Safety Employees Association. And we have offered a written statement supporting the bill, and I offered it to the bill sponsor. And we do want to thank Representative Gruenberg, Chenault, and Representative Lynn, and the committee here for listening to the bill. As we see it, House Bill 67 gives municipalities by ordinance the option to offer a property tax exemption as a means to attract law enforcement officers to reside in areas of the community where there is a higher occurrence of crime than is found in the municipality as a whole. These are needs areas. And the municipality we see must, by ordinance, adopt the tax exemption, define what a law enforcement officer is, and identify the area that is eligible for the exemption. If the municipality adopts an ordinance, it exempts from taxation an amount not to exceed $150,000 of assessed value of real property if an officer owns in whole or in part and occupies in whole or in part a primary permanent residence of abode in the designated area. We feel HB 67 gives communities a tool to use in attracting law enforcement officers to areas of high incidence of crime. The bill offers an incentive for an officer and his or her family, and I hope we don't forget there's a family generally connected to all of our officers. It just simply gives that incentive to the officer, to the family, to consider whether they're going to buy a home and reside in a designated area where there is a high incident of crime. So providing an incentive in the form of tax relief may help attract families of peace officers to neighborhoods where crime is an issue. If the quid pro quo is a neighborhood that is safer, the incentive will have been worth that and much more. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from committee members? Is there anyone else online that hasn't been heard that would like to be heard on HB 67? Someone sighed. Is there anyone in the audience that hasn't signed up that would like to testify before the committee?
Thank you again, Madam Chairman. My name is Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League, and we fully support the intent of this bill, as we supported the intent of HB 60 as well. But the key word to us in this bill is the third word in the bill, which is may. So we certainly applaud Representative Gruenberg for inserting that word may. It certainly has a large impact, and this allows communities to make the local decisions on what and how they might handle this. Thank you very much.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you, Ms. Wasserman. Anyone else wishing to testify before the committee? With that, it is 9:20, and within the indulgence of the body, I have specific questions on both HB 60 and HB 67 that I'd like to communicate to the sponsors of the bills. And with that, we have no other bills scheduled for Thursday's meeting, so if there is no will of the body to meet, I would cancel Community and Regional Affairs meeting for Thursday. Is there any objections to that at the committee? Then we'll notify the clerk's office that that committee meeting will be canceled. With that, is there any comments from committee members? Seeing none, it's 9:22, and this meeting's adjourned.